during that period of time, do you remember any dealings with the blacks?
Not a great deal. We didn't deal with them very much. We'd hire them to work in the house or in the field or something. That we just
didn't right know here deal with them.
So you had separate schools, separate churches,
churches,
company, okay, and labor.
They lived separate from y'all, like
right,
in different parts of town.
Right.
LL Young.
So basically, you were really never bothered with integration or any of that until
right,
well into the 60s then.
Right.
Not until it was forced.
I know y'all had Virginia coming over and helping Mom.
Yeah.
Back when I was like four or five or six years yeah, old, because I remember playing with LJ.
She was made to Aunt Afri.
Yeah.
And prior to that, I think Aunt Afri's brother.
Okay, that could be. Who would that be? Clarence?
Clarence. Uncle Clarence.
But I remember we would go out and play, but Virginia and Mom both made us stay in the backyard.
Yeah.
Because you didn't want to get out front where people could see us.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to play with the blacks, the whites and the blacks play together, but not where folks can see you. Mm-hmm. And I can remember Virginia would fix our meals, and we would sit at the table and eat, and she would fix hers and LJ's meal, and they would sit in the kitchen and eat. Because it wasn't right for blacks and whites to eat together. She was hired help.
Well, who enforced that mostly? Her or your mother?
It seemed to me like it was her. Mm-hmm. She says that's the way it's supposed to be.
That's the way it's supposed to be.
Which was fairly common practice. I mean, they learned a order of living.
That's kind of like those folks in Driving Miss Daisy. You know, the black guy that was driving the car had his own way that he had to do things.
And it was just not proper to do it elsewhere, and
right,
we didn't change that.
Right.
The fact of segregation.
And even if you wanted to, you couldn't change it. It was
right.
It was wrong.
It was just,
and they didn't like it.
Built into everybody's thinking.
Kind of funny, because I remember after Mom got the car and got started driving, when Virginia would come over, we had to take her home after she got through work. And Mom was driving, and Virginia would always get in the back seat. She would not ride in the front seat.
Goodness.
Well, that's like the first time I came to Birmingham, and this was in 64, after the racial segregation riots. And I was going to school at downtown, and I would take a bus to University Hospital and back. And the first thing I always liked the back seat of buses. And the first time I did that, the bus driver informed me I was not allowed to sit back and I had to go in front of the bus. And I went, huh? And he told me that the back of the bus was reserved for blacks.
They used to have a thing that's stuck down in the back of the seat. And it said white on one side and colored on the other side. And if the white section got filled up, it was quite common for the bus driver to get out, to stop the bus, get up, go back there, take that signboard out, and move it back three or four seats. Even though the black sections were full, it would be common for him to make them get up and move the board back so that white folks could sit.
Well, we never had that many folks on the bus, but I don't remember the signs because I was like I said, I was after the laws stating that there would not be that. But this was after the laws. And I had, of course, coming from California, had knew nothing about front and back of the bus.
Well, see, we rode the bus to Phillips back and forth. And if you didn't catch the student or the school bus, the special, you had to wait and ride the regular bus that runs, then you had both on there. But when I was in high school, there were no blacks in Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
That was strictly a white high school.
Yeah,
the blacks went to either Carver or Parker or one other one.
That's a good
number. I didn't know those were black schools originally.
Yeah. Parker and Carver.
Well, see, I'm not being real familiar with the school system here.
But Phillips had their first black students soon after he graduated. It's Clayton and Carol, both remember.
How much more have we got to do on this?
That's plenty.
That's about it. You ready to take your nap?
Yeah.
The following is from another tape that was taken in 1974. For an assignment that my brother did on about the same subject.
Lake Purdy to fish, and when we got there, there was a panther on the other side of the lake. He was screaming, and it sounded like a woman being tortured. He'd jump in the water and kind of swim around, and we thought he was going to swim across the lake, and we tore out home, and we made about the fastest trip home that any two or three boys ever made. Another time, cousins and I, an old shepherd dog, went down into the woods with our slingshots, and we would we would find lizards on a tree, and we'd ring up around it and shoot him off. On one occasion, we were more or less attacked by a wild hog with long tusks, T-U-S-K-S. We climbed up some little saplings because they were easy to climb, but we could barely get out of reach of the hog with his slashing tusks before the small sapling would start bending over, so we were barely out of reach and couldn't go up any higher. But old faithful Shep, at our urging, kept dashing in and nipping the hog on his hind legs and led him off down through the woods. But we were too scared to come down out of the tree, and we stayed up there about an hour, and old Shep came back and lay down under the tree and went to sleep. Then there was a time when I was by myself down at the spring branch. In the branch, I had caught several what they call horny head suckers, about 6-7 inches long. At this time, it was a dry summer, and the branch was barely running and had little potholes in it. And living close to Lake Purdy, I would catch some of the minnows and go down and fish or sell minnows to other fishermen. On this occasion, I found a pothole that had half a dozen minnows in it and leaves on the bottom. The water was about 3 inches deep. I cut both hands and seined through there with my hands and caught a minnow or two. By that time, the water was muddied and I couldn't see. I felt something scaly and rough, and I figured, oh boy, that's one of those horny head suckers. So I braked down through there with my fingers and clamped down on him and raised him up. It was a moccasin snake. You can bet I turned him loose fast. I must have thrown 3 bushels of rocks at him and never did hit him. Another time, we were living out near Lake Purdy, and a hawk caught one of our chickens, but he dropped it. I got a stack stacked bird trap made out of pieces of wood stacked up into a pyramid shape and had triggers that you would prop it up with. So I set this trap over the dead chicken, and lo and behold, the hawk came back to get his supper. The trap caught the hawk. I got him out some way or other. I had his head in one hand and both feet with his talons on them, claws, in the other hand. I couldn't turn him loose to chop his head off, so I had to lug him about a block and a half home and get somebody else to cut his head off for me. My cousin and I used to catch crawfish in the spring branch, and at one time we had about a dozen of them, and we brought them up and was playing with them around the woodpile. We had an old hunting dog there. He was actually a grown pup, and he was sitting around there watching what we were doing, and he'd flop his tail over one way and he'd flop his tail over the other way. At one time, he flopped his tail over right by one of the big crawfish, and the crawfish clamped down on his tail. The dog really let out a yelp and took off. When I was about 10 or 11 years old, one Sunday morning, I went down to my little secluded swimming pool down in the spring branch and was going to play around in the water a while. To get there, I had to wade across a little shallow ford in the branch, and I was looking up in the trees, watching and listening to the birds, but out of the tail of my eye, I could see something that looked like a log down there, right close to where I was walking. That was unusual because there was not supposed to be a log there. So I looked down, and that's when I saw an 7 foot 8 inch alligator. I screamed and hollered and yelled and got my dad to come down there. And with shotguns and an axe, the alligator was killed. We drug him up the hill and put him on the bank by the side of the road where people could see him. And I guess there must have been 1,000 cars come by that afternoon. Everybody that saw the alligator spread the word. The picture the next Sunday was in the rotogravure section of the Sunday paper, showing me and the alligator. I can remember the first car my dad ever bought. It was an open Ford touring car. The top would fold back, and when it rained, we put up side curtains that had isinglass windows in it. Back in those days, the gas tank was under the dash of the car, and gas was fed by gravity feed because the cars did not have fuel pumps at that time. There's a place called Pine Ridge at the upper end of Lake Purdy on the road going over to Irondale. If the gas in the tank was low, there was a steep place about halfway up the hill where the gas would not flow to the engine. So then we'd have to roll back down the hill and turn around and back up the hill so that the gas would run down into the engine. Then at the top of the hill, we had to turn around and go down the other side. Lake Purdy covers the homesteads of both my grandfathers. My father and several of my uncles helped build Lake Purdy Dam. Jim, I hope this is what you want and will suffice for your paper.